Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask, how's your life flowing? Clearly and smoothly? Do you have clarity in your work, in your whole life? Perhaps we all need a clarity compass to help us find our way better. In order to do that, I've just read a wonderful book called The Clarity Compass. And we're fortunate to have the author of that book on the show today, Dr. Britt Paulson. Britt, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to talk about clarity.
I like the introduction. It was a good kickoff here. Everybody needs a clarity compass. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about why we need it, because how many of us have blind spots?
So it's a good question to start the interview off with, because from my perspective, all of us have blind spots, that our capacity to understand reality is limited. And given the complexity of reality, the complexity of the world, we can't absorb all of what it is. And so we have reality maps that are trying to track it. So inside our heads are these mental guidelines, what I'm calling reality maps. And because we can't get a perfect picture of the world, the reality maps are riddled with these blind spots.
Well, I would suggest that nowadays there are many people in the world who are operating with tremendous blind spots.
Yeah, I would agree. Especially with the diversity and the conflict that we're having right now, it's almost worse. It's my daughter, even, she's 17. She said, "Daddy, it reminds me of what's happening in the world today. It reminds me of the Civil War, about how these things are getting polarized." And to me, Peter, it does relate to these reality maps. Both extremes, and any, whether it's a politically or even in a relationship, as you said at the beginning, or at work, you know, tend to go find people who believe the same way they do and reinforce their reality maps, which only increases the blind spots.
Well, so much of it has to do with ego, and ego has to do with fear. And I think that we have a very strong player in our brain. I call it the reptilian mind, which is our fear, and it plays out in a reality map of its own that's sometimes very dissonant. No, it thinks it's right about everything.
Actually, as you say that, I mean, that to me is the very definition of the challenge, is that somewhere there is this reptilian brain that somehow has some higher functions, you know, in the cerebral cortex, but they're linked together. And so it's trying to create stability in the world. And so once we get a set of reality maps that we think are real and represent reality, somehow that fear you were talking about kicks in and says, I got to keep my sense of reality. And I think our sanity is less stable than we like to think. And because of that, we go into that fear place more. It's like, no, I have to be right. My reality's maps have to be right. If we start questioning our reality maps, then in a sense, our reality unravels. Our ego becomes threatened. It's like, oh, I'm uncertain. I don't know. I mean, you can almost see the fear in people sometimes. Sometimes, hopefully, we can see it in ourselves. And then that the ego's kicking in there to say, no, how do I kind of firm down my reality map so that I'm right, so that I can have less of that fear you were talking about?
Well, I think we're bombarded with fear propaganda. You know, there are these warrior chieftains out there who want to gain power by promoting fear that distorts people's reality maps. It pushes their reptilian brains.
Yeah, it's like I like the chieftain piece there, because in a sense, a lot of folks have gotten into power because of their capacity to influence those reptilian brains and create fear, everything from commercials that make you feel bad because you got bad breath to political leaders who are, you know, on every side, who are pointing out how the evil other person is going to destroy the world. And next thing you know, we're in panic and in reactive mode trying to save ourselves and ultimately just reinforcing our current belief systems.
Right. And so we have to create clarity compasses for so many levels of our lives, you know, in one way just to behave in a way that we feel we can influence the larger context around us, perhaps, you know, make statements out in the world, show up at events, demonstrate, whatever we need to do to help create clarity, at least of our position. Mm-hmm. But then your book is really written about more about the more immediate level of our lives where we want to pursue successful directions in our lives to become successful with what we're involved in. How are we handling our jobs? How are we handling our work relationships and even our personal relationships based on trying to come to the strongest sense of clarity that we can.
Even as you laid that out, Peter, you know, you laid it out into personal work and personal relationships, as well as the kind of grander scheme. And I don't know, just yesterday I was working with actually two clients coming in, and they were needing to influence the CEO. And it's interesting because the conversation we had, I think, can be come across all levels of that you just mentioned. So, for example, their challenge was, hey, we've been bugging our boss for a year and a half about this crisis, and our boss isn't talking to the people that, or they are talking to it, but they're just not being effective. And it was interesting because my clients, the two clients that were in there, were saying, yeah, we've been bugging him for a year and a half saying this is a crisis. And I said, well, have you asked him what conversations he's having with these other folks? Have you asked him what they're saying? And one of them was like, well, yeah, we should do that. And the other one was like, oh, no, you know, we don't want to get fired. And I was like, no, are you going to really get fired because you push on a critical issue? You should get a bonus. And so the conversation pursued, you know, as the conversation pursued and went on, you know, it became clear to them that while they've been bugging their boss, they had not really had some of these what I call creative conversations that move the conversation forward. You know, and I see it similarly because I work with families, with their kids, with spouses. You know, or if we're protesting, are we saying the things that are making a difference, or actually are we saying things that are actually mobilizing the opposition rather than influencing them in a positive way?
Well, I think that word creative conversations is really super important. And yet it's a slippery slope, too, because it depends on the level of the blind spots, the reptilian brain, in the person you're trying to influence, mm-hmm. and how much they're mm-hmm. holding on to their own stories.
Yeah. Well, Peter, I can tell you've read the book by what you're saying, and I find myself really grateful. It's like, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. Yeah, because that's exactly right, because what I say to folks is there's no guarantee by using the clarity compass and having creative conversations that you're going to get the results you want. It just increases the probability significantly. And it's really a testament to what you're saying, because other people have the reptilian brains, they have the fear, they're hunkered down. The more I attack the other person and the more I tell them they have to listen to me, and if you'd only – I mean, that's where most of us come from in our conversations. If this person would only understand my point of view and see how right it is, then everything would be okay. Unfortunately, that just increases that reptilian brain, that increases the defenses, increases the fear in them. So
right,
what we really need to do at some level is, yeah.
Yeah, you have strategies. That? You have action strategies in the book, in your compass, mm-hmm. that tackle this. I mean, that's the point, is that sometimes we can't do it ourselves. We have to locate the crucial people who can sometimes a boss's wife is more important than talking to the boss.
Yeah, that's Good point. Actually, it's funny because I have a number of clients, you know, these old curmudgeons, and they say, well, I don't want to tell you this, but my wife told me to tell you thank you, you know, because some they're starting to change the behavior and it's starting to slip into the home life too. But yeah, the crucial people is a key part. It's maybe I'm not the person to influence this, the person that I'm talking to. Maybe I need to reach out to some other people to get some support or get some insight, not to gang up on the person, but there may be a person they listen to more than me, or a person might be able to give me some advice or give me some access to someone else that can make a difference.
Right. And one thing I thought about a lot in reading the book is how we all have different personalities and different levels of assertion and competition and ability to confront or not. Some of us, I know in my design, I have trouble confronting people. So my job is always to influence other people to influence other people.
Who can confront. Well, it's interesting because one of the things that I like to talk about my clients with, as soon as you put the conversation in the context of confrontation, largely you've already lost. That's why I like the idea of the creative conversation versus the crucial conversation, the fierce conversation, because the context is, hey, how can I come together with this other person and have a different kind of conversation than I've ever had? If, for example, the ones who I just talked about with the boss, it's like, okay, you've had that same conversation, you know, 69 times. How can you have a different conversation, one that's full of possibility, one that's full of imagination? Same thing working with people who want to work with their kids. You know, if you're having the same conversation over and over again, how can you invite possibility and imagination? How can you invite creativity into it? So it's less about the confronting. Sometimes there still needs to be confronting. I'm not saying that never happens. But really the context is, how can I have a different kind of conversation than I've ever had before?
And maybe there's a part that you talk about in the book is how to make requests. And maybe that's better than confronting, is somehow to figure out how to create requests that people have trouble saying no to.
Yeah, nice. I think that's it. But the creative conversation, if I use the clarity map pieces, intentions to actions, facts versus story, I go into the creative conversation. I really am clear about my intentions, clear about their intentions. I'm paraphrasing what they're saying so they feel really heard, so that I create an open space where the request is more likely to be heard and more likely to be acted upon. Then I've set up the conversation for success rather than just going in and arguing again.
Right. Right. And so there's working, you have a lot of history working with this Clarity Compass with a lot of different people to show how effective it is and how many people really rely on it in their lives to examine their strategies. I think what's so valuable about this is that it creates strategy that helps us find clarity. So this compass has to do with understanding what our intentions are. And that's really, you know, very important to really understand ourselves to begin with, you know, on every level, because there are immediate intentions and then there are what you call deeper wants, you know, that why we have our intentions, understanding ourselves better to see what drives us and why we're making the requests we might be making.
To both be conscious in terms of deliberately choosing the primary intention we're seeking, as well as you're pointing out with the deeper wants, is if I have a deeper want where I just want to make the other person wrong, it's probably not going to help you have a great creative conversation. So to be more aware of, you know, what are my intentions going in here? I mean, I've had people say, I just wanted the other person to admit they're wrong and tell me how great I was. And they said, once I awoke to that, I could let it go. But until then, I could see it had been driving me. So again, awakening to unconscious deeper wants and unconscious intentions, as well as just being more deliberate in what I'm focusing on in the conversation.
Right. And to understand, you know, what the outcome really needs to be rather than just to be right about something.
Exactly. And being open, I think that's part of this, is that if I can hear what the other person's deeper want, what is it that they're wanting underneath what they're saying? And then I can design an outcome that meets both of our needs as best we can, the likelihood of moving forward and being effective increases.
Now, a lot of conversations have to do with if something is true or not. If there are questions around the validity of some point people are making or not, and there's a whole part of your compass that has to do with facts, and I think that, you know, it really is a big part of every discussion, is what are the facts?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what can we rely on to be true in this discussion or not?
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, facts are being overlooked. We have our blind spots about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a whole thing, the whole vaccine issue is totally up for grabs in terms of who's holding what facts. And each side will, you know, say the other side doesn't have the facts. And so, you know, what are the facts, and are they going to be put on the table or not? And so then you get a situation where the facts aren't allowed to be put on the table. And then you're really stuck.
Yeah. So there's a piece there where what are the facts, and how do you know they're facts? And mostly what we're looking at in the clarity compass is what's observable, who's observing it, what information is coming from there, what are real facts? And then the second piece, which is tied in closely with what you're talking about, is that we tend to interpret our own stories as facts. You know, we see it, you know, in the media, we see it in our interpersonal relationships. There's something there in terms of we make up a story about a person, a party, a relationship, somebody we know, and then we take it as a fact about what they did or who they are or what kind of person they are. You know, she was rude. And it's like, okay, well, that can be subject to interpretation. It could be just they were expressing themselves or they're, you know, they, you know, especially here I live on in West Coast. It's like they're not rude. They're just from New York. You know,
a lot of times women aren't allowed to express strong emotions as men are.
Yeah.
You know, women are bad women if they assert themselves too much.
Yeah, I have quite a few female clients, and it's a dance that of distorted stories that we have to constantly be working with. And some places are not so bad, but there are some, and mostly it's like, no, if a woman gets a little bit too assertive, it's not okay. Where a man's like, okay, well, he's just asserting himself. So that's a good, great example of stories. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's so much to this clarity compass that needs to be, you know, understood. And I guess that's why people call on you, because you've had so many experiences and so many situations where you understand where the blind spots are and what people's egos are protecting.
Yeah, yeah, well said. And we've covered each of the polarities now, so I think this kind of a good summary of the compass itself is that there's two polarities that we've talked about already, and I'll just put it more clearly, is the first is north to south, whereas the intention is the North Star. It's like, what is the direction I want to go? That's the North Star, which has the polarity down to the south, which is the actions. How do my intentions flow into actions, and actions such as you've mentioned before, crucial people, making requests. So what do I need to do with my intentions to turn them into effective actions? And then the east-west polarity is facts versus stories. So in these complex situations, how do I start sorting out the facts versus the stories that I'm making about the facts? And then even looking at the facts, what facts am I choosing to use and what facts am I choosing to ignore? And each of these have sub-directions. You've named a few on the show here. And then as we work with the Clarity Compass, it helps us work through our blind spots, see ourselves more clearly. The first half of the book is about Clarity Compass for self, see ourselves more clearly, what's going on with us. Then Clarity Compass for others, stepping into the other person's shoes so that we can be even more effective with them in working with their blind spots and what you call their amphibian brain and their fears. And so that it's a complete package like that that moves the whole conversation forward, which is why I call it creative conversations.
Right. And I think there's a limitation as to the people who are open-minded to be willing to have creative conversations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much goes on in the corporate world that has to do with bullying and arrogance and ego that isn't open to that. But then there are a lot of companies that are really open-minded and dynamic and respect everybody and want to look for creative conversations.
Yeah. And I see it as my responsibility and my role to work with those better companies and how do you make them more successful and more prominent in the world so that we have more of those kind of companies that are really egalitarian and caring and open. And for the companies I'm in where they're not that, it's to how do I support people and move in that direction, you know, slowly but surely sometimes, but sometimes more radically to have people have kind of awakenings to not only is it not healthy what you're doing, but really you're not going to get the kind of results that you are wanting to get. You're not going to be profitable if you are berating your employees or not having important conversations or not being open to hear things that you really should be hearing.
I don't know. One time I was trying to help a guy, a head of a corporation, who was a bully.
Mm.
And he was just sure that was the way it works. And he wouldn't want to change the way he thinks he's successful. He doesn't realize that he's really demoralizing everybody.
Well, that probably brings to mind Deck in the book. He's the first. He's one of the two case studies. Is exactly like what you're describing. He starts out by saying, and that's where I start the book. I hate the Clarity Compass because it started to awaken him slowly but surely and painfully for sure for him is to awaken. Okay, well maybe there is another way. And it doesn't mean everybody I work with that's a bully gets transformed. But I'd say 80% of the people really start making some movement towards seeing there's a better way, you know, than what their reality maps are having them act out at this point.
Right, and he had to talk to you because so many of his employees just kept on leaving.
Right. And he's like, well, there's something wrong with them, you know? And it's like, well, you know, mate, let's take another look at this. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, because it's that the defenses. You know, you talked about from the very beginning, Peter, which I so appreciate. It's like his fear is that it's me, and so I don't want to look at that. So I just want to keep blaming everybody else. But at some point, we made some progress, and it's like, oh, maybe there's something else going on here beyond ungrateful employees who don't know how wonderfully they have it.
Yeah, because he's paying them.
There's an incentive there, exactly, because it's costly to lose employees.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is – I think people should really examine this book and help them just learn to, you know, build a map, a reality map for themselves that takes into account – all of the opportunities that are in this compass to you know, to see where to go next, how to you know, for instance, you do spend a lot of time on crucial people and understanding how to enlist correct people in our lives. You know, some of us really want the opportunity of the support of others.
Mm-hmm.
And don't always know how to get it. Don't always know that how crucial they can be.
Yeah. Well, as you say that, Peter, it reminds me of your domain name that you use. It's heart, theheartriver.org. And it prompts me to say that the book is a cognitive analytical tool. It starts off as cerebral, which even I have a lot of engineers that love it because it just so makes so much sense to them. But then it ultimately is an invitation to our humanness, to those deeper wants you talked about. I mentioned Heart River, .org, your domain name that you use. And I talk about heart in the book too, so that we start from this cognitive place that really helps us to understand our situations better. But over time, we move into more of our heart, more of our humanity, more of the core. The French word for heart is core, the courage and strength and resilience that we have. So it quickly moves from an effective, practical, cognitive, analytical tool to a place of heart and strength and courage and connection with other people.
Right, and to really acknowledge, respect our wisdom. Mm-hmm. That wants to see the bigger picture and use a compass like this to put everything in their place so that we can have a proper strategy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm loving the way you're saying some things because it's exactly right. Because there's something there is once we've used the polarities and the sub-directions there, we have a more comprehensive picture. And ultimately, with the deeper wants and with some of the stories and beliefs we have, you know, it takes us to that amphibian brain, you know, which we tend to think of as negative because it's so reactive and fearful. But ultimately, the soft underbelly of our beings, you know, are tender, soft, caring, loving places that they do want to connect. If once we get to feel like we can relax a little bit and get out of the fear mode that we can get triggered and stuck in.
But also on the other side of that, all of this clarity really supports the reptilian brain and the ego to relax and to know that things are being taken care of.
Yeah. There's something there like, okay, actually I am thinking this through better than I ever have. Because if you're like me and most people, you know, it's easy to go into I'm thinking about something at night and I keep having the same conversation. I wish I said, or what I want to say is, you know, and the ego and the reptilian brain could just get us trapped in that kind of that loop where the clarity compass invites us out of that loop and have more clarity to, as you said, it's like, oh, okay, I understand this better. Maybe I can relax. There is some hope for some change.
So,
and I have.
We're running out of time. I'm hearing music. So, What is a website that people can go to?
ClarityCompassBook.com. www.ClarityCompassBook.com.
Okay, ClarityCompassBook.com. Britt Paulson, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Me
and I hope
too,
everybody
Peter.
Takes
really
advantage
good.
Of this. Right.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Peter.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.